Good afternoon, everybody. This is our special summer reading program, and we are talking to Mary McCreevy today, who is joining us from Minnesota. And she is a social media superstar that has a TikTok account called Tips from Dead People. Well, you see it and you're like, ooh, what's Tips from Dead People? And then you watch a couple of videos and they're fabulous. So I thought Mary would be a great person to talk to us about obituaries and just the whole cloud of why obituaries are important and why we should maybe all write our own obituary. So Mary, if you would like to take it away, I will quit talking.
Thank you so much, Jamie, and thanks for having me. I just in the previous 10 minutes, I've learned so much about the Wolfner Library and the services available to people, and I'm happy to know that. It makes me feel so happy. So I thought I would start by just telling you a little bit about my background and how I fell into this very strange chapter of my life. So I am originally from South Dakota, as I mentioned, and as an adult, I've lived all over the country in Wisconsin, Indiana, New York, Texas, and now Minnesota. And as I would travel to these different places, I would have good jobs, decent jobs that I cared about, but I wouldn't ever say that I was the kind of person when they tell you to find your passion. I don't think I ever really did that. And I come from a family of very high achievers. I don't know if any of you guys can relate to that. And I always sort of had this feeling that maybe I wasn't doing anything noteworthy or doing something that would land my obituary, for example, in the New York Times, as we were just talking about. And that kind of, as a competitive person in today's achievement-oriented culture, that always kind of bugged me. So that's part of my story. Part of my job, I did social work for a while, and then I made a transition into doing video production. So I was a producer director for a small women-owned video production company in St. Paul for the most recent about 18 years. So alongside that, in South Dakota, my mom was briefly the obituary editor for my hometown paper, the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And I was a young kid then, but I paid attention to what was happening and started reading the obituaries. And that has been a lifelong hobby, but only recently one that I talked about because I really thought it was just too kind of quirky or peculiar. I'm not sure. So a few years ago, I was in the midst of a very stressful work project. And I thought, I don't have like a craft that I do. I'm not artsy craftsy. I'm not musical. I don't have those skills. But I thought I need something creative to do. So I'm gonna dig out all the obituaries that I've saved over the years because I would clip out good ones in all the cities that I lived in. I'm gonna figure out why I saved them and I'm gonna share them on social media. And I really didn't care. And honestly, probably still wouldn't matter if people watch because it was something that I wanted to do for myself. I have three daughters in their 20s, so they were my in-house geek squad. And I asked them about the different platforms and what they thought of as the pros and cons, and if I were going to do this project, what they would recommend. So their first reaction, of course, was like, cringe. Why would our mom ever do this? But they ultimately helped me out and are now my biggest supporters. At the time, they recommended TikTok and they said TikTok is a place where you can be a little messy, a little bit less curated, a little bit less polished or advertorial or whatever. So I did a quick lesson on how to post a TikTok video. I had never done it before. And I started just sharing good obituaries that I had collected and that I thought maybe could help people like me who weren't sure if they had followed the right path in life or were looking for something different or just it was good writing. That's kind of really didn't have an agenda. It took me about 2 minutes to come up with the name. I'm sure a branding agency would probably have told me not to say Tips from Dead People and put a happy tombstone as my logo, but I did. And I went along for a couple months just posting a couple videos here and there. And then, I don't know, as the algorithm does, one of the videos that I posted, which if you, I mean, I can tell you which one it was the most unlikely video of all. I posted it and went to bed. And then the morning I woke up and it had over 1 million views and like over 5,000 comments just in that one overnight. So somehow that video caught a wave, and then TikTok started putting me on a faster highway, and then I quickly got up to, I think, almost a couple hundred thousand followers, and people from the media started calling, public radio, public television, newspapers, like, what's this crazy little thing all about? It's kind of like how they interview the person with the largest ball of twine. I just think people didn't kind of know what to do with it. It's weird, but let's do a story on this. But then I got asked to do a keynote speech at a hospice providers convention. This was 1.5 years ago. And I worked really hard on it because I am not a public speaker. I didn't have that experience. And I thought, if this is something that I really, really enjoy, I'm gonna try to do more of these. But it was just sort of like a test case. And the speech was 1 hour long. And I loved it. It was great. I have really great interactions with the people there. I think there were about 450 people in the room. My first speech. And so since then, TikTok, is kind of circling the drain. So I've started posting on Instagram. If you're someone who has Instagram but not TikTok, feel free to follow me there. I think throughout the course of this year, I'm going to try to branch out to Facebook. I had resisted some Meta stuff, but I really do think that probably my demographic is still on Facebook. So anyway, this is a long, winding way of introducing the whole tips from dead people concept. And I brought with me some four different obituaries. Two of them are self-written, if that's the direction you want to go in. Two of them are just funny and fun and really well written. But I thought I would just pause for a second and see if anyone has any questions, or you want to talk about obituary writing in general and newspapers. I have lots of thoughts about the way newspapers run their obituary sections and that model and why it's dying. Okay. So, how do you find the obituaries you use? So, initially, like I said, they were all mine that I had just collected, cut out from physical newspapers over the years. But once that first video kind of went viral, I have never, I do still look at the obituaries all the time because it's still the hobby that I love the most in the world. But I haven't really ever had to source my own anymore because all of a sudden then my DMs were flooded with obituaries from listeners, viewers, and my email inbox. I set up a Tips from Dead People Gmail account, and that was kind of flooded with submissions too. So now I set up like a little spreadsheet or whatever, and now I just like put them all in there and I put tags in there. This is funny. This is savage. This is short. This is long. This is poignant. Addiction, suicide, all these different things. And just depending on the mood, and whatever strikes me, that's how I choose what to do for that day. And I try to do two or three a week. Yeah, that's kind of it. So I can talk a little bit about the kind of obituaries that I choose. I think part of what fascinated me early on, even as a kid, about obituaries is that there was more between the lines than was actually written. Because of the pay-to-play method of doing obituaries as classified ads, essentially in newspapers, people default to short. They default to a template that they've seen other obituaries. They default to etiquette and politeness and don't speak ill of the dead and all that kind of stuff. So when I would come across an obituary where there was something a little bit more, or there was like a little mystery or gossip or something that spoke to me about my own journey, and the path to happiness or whatever you want to call it, that's what I would be interested in, and that's what I'm still interested in. So when I'm sifting through obituaries and I kind of try to decide what will engage my viewers and what's interesting to me, I pick people that are non-famous and where their obituary is more than a resume or a template. And you really feel at the end that you get to know the heart of that unique person, the good, the bad, and the in between. So I'm as fascinated by the negative obituaries as I am by the ones that are all positive. And I've never done this before. I've thought maybe at some point I should do like a, 10 steps to writing a good obituary kind of infographic. But if I were to do that now, what I would say is don't Google how to write an obituary because, or AI, all of that shared digital knowledge takes you back to the templates that everybody has already done. It's my true belief that if you have a more honest, authentic obituary, it can help you with the grieving process for those left behind. It can probably contribute to a better death if you're the one writing the obituary for yourself, knowing that your story is going to be well told. And big picture, maybe changing the way that obituaries are written just a little bit could change the way we think about death and life in general. Like, what is success? What is failure? Is it your resume that matters the most? Is it your awards? Or is it the fact that, Diet Peach Snapple was your favorite drink? And I come down hard on that last part. The more details, the more little things, the better. Sometimes I'll tell people who are struggling to write an obituary and they message me, just start with a list of the things that you hate and the things that you love. Often that's all you need. Good stories will flow from there. Actually, if you want, I can throw in my first obituary here because it's to that very point. This is Trish, and this is one of my favorite ones. I use this in the speeches that I give now. This is Trish. She never let the truth get in the way of a good story. Patricia Gail Donahue, aka Trish or Strap, age 46, living in Squamish, British Columbia, died January 2nd, 2015, just outside of Lillooet. I mess up words all the time. British Columbia, on a return trip home from her cottage at Bridge Lake. Trish was born in Sarnia, Ontario on April 1st, 1968, and was certainly nobody's fool. Trish went to St. Patrick's High School and then attended McMaster University. Trish, or Strap's, generosity knew no bounds, as on one occasion, whilst shuttling her friend to a party, Trish literally gave her the clothes off her behind and then returned home without her jeans. Her God-given resourcefulness, coupled with her common sense, gave Trish the skills to help anyone in need. After her husband, Sage, and Trish made their way out west to fulfill a need for steeper slopes, she worked at Whistler Blackcomb for 15 years in a variety of capacities, where she was known to have a Coke and Skittles for breakfast in the Slack Shack. Although she was a committed employee, she found company policies tedious and, as a result, broadened her work experience at a rapid pace. I love that line. Her service standards at the keg were second to none. Trish was relaxed and confident in her parenting style, but always knew how to intuitively meet the needs of her children. She was real and distributed advice, but was never preachy or judgmental. Not one to get caught up in the hubbub of parenting trends, she was grounded in her values and opinions. She was old school and good school. She was consistent and loyal. Trish loved, loved, loved Vanity Fair, Sudoku, the New Yorker cartoons, White Lilies, David Sedaris, Underdogs, square-shaped bullet points, a cup of tea, the long and lean trouser from the Gap, Kay Thompson, predicting futures, square-faced Cartier watches, cold potatoes, poetry, Capri Blue candles, interior design, and scratch and win tickets. In reverse order, she equally found these things excruciating: the dentist, tight spaces, small-minded people, houseplants, the song Jezebel, Caillou, because everyone hates that bald kid, unmatched socks, anything laundry, composting, fluorescent lights, tinted glasses, skinny jeans, gray roots, and hard butter. She rarely shanked it. True story. That's Trish. So, of course, it's a great obituary, tip to toe, but you could just probably take those last two paragraphs of what she loved and didn't love, and I would be in love with Trish. Sometimes I think, like, okay, if you're at a dinner party and you have random seating, who would you rather sit next to? Like a CEO who's talking about KPIs and deliverables, or someone like Trish, where you could go deep on cold butter and Skittles and David Sedaris for the night? So, reading a lot of these obituaries at this point, thousands and thousands, really started to change my competitive brain around the idea of success and failure. Like, I can be very generous in my heart towards someone like Trish and say, she's fascinating. I want to sit next to her at dinner. She's a success. But when you turn the mirror on yourself and you want to say the same thing about yourself, at least for me, it was always a little bit harder because I would say, well, that's fine for them, but really, I should be doing something. Like, I should be getting awards. I should have done the same job like all my siblings did all through adulthood. But in the course of reading thousands of stories like Trish's, but also ones that are different from hers, my competitive brain has started to change. And that's why I talk about this all the time. I believe in the power of an authentic obituary that is real and full of tiny details. I believe in the power of that story to change people's lives for the better. And it may just be that you take some of that pressure off yourself to find your passion. No one would ever say that Trish wasn't a success. That obituary oozed love. What are we here on earth for? So that's an example of the kind of obituary that I'm really, really drawn to, why I'm drawn to it, and why I believe this content has resonated so much with the people that are following me on all these channels or asking me to speak. And I mean, I have had people tell me that at this point, it's like teachers who all of a sudden start to teach the kids of their first students. I've had people tell me that watching my account has changed the way they wrote their obituary for their loved one. Like, they went back to the list of obituaries that I share online. I have a link tree where every obituary that I've ever shared is on that link tree, and used that to write their own loved one's obituary or their own obituary, like pre-writing, in a different way. And I can't even tell you how good that makes me feel. I mean, truly, this started off as just a very peculiar hobby that I just thought would just be me, myself, and my little phone and a lonely TikTok account. But to hear that kind of thing, this little journey has absolutely changed my life. I highly recommend just keeping a note, whether it's written or on an app or whatever, of the things that you want in your obituary, sharing it with someone, or even pre-writing your own. I love it so much. So maybe I'll just jump into that. So I have two self-written obituaries. So these are two very poignant ones that are of a different tone, and you'll see what I mean immediately. Okay. This first one is James. If you are reading this now, it means that my tired heart decided it was time to quit beating on or about December 1st, 2024. If you knew my fascination with recurring numbers, you will realize that I was 62 years old. I was born in 1962, and I lost my beloved mother when she too was 62 years old. The number 24 appears in both my birth and death dates. If you thought of me as your friend, I am grateful beyond measure. If you were kind to me in high school, I have never forgotten your name, your words, your actions, or your helping hand. Perhaps you know I was the only one of my immediate family to obtain a high school diploma. If you shared a meal with me, welcomed me into your home, or included me in a family celebration, know that I treasured and spoke of those memories often. If you gave me a job because I was loyal, punctual, and dedicated, know that it was the highlight of my life. Early employment at Lisa's Lamplighter and Jet Car Wash set the stage for my 20-year career with Hertz and Avis as a rental car agent at Bert Mooney Airport. Here I found lasting friendships and an appreciation for my favorite pens, my beautiful penmanship, and my excellent customer service. If you were one of my Avon ladies, please know that I delighted in sharing new products with you and being able to sit and visit. Your support throughout 2 decades allowed me to repeatedly earn coveted awards and prestigious national recognition within the company. My mother, Carol, was a top seller also, and together we made quite the team. If you reached out to me when my mother died in 2002, you truly understood my devastation, abandonment, and sense of hopelessness for the future. She was my rock, my role model, my biggest cheerleader, and my stability. Together, we loved all things Christmas, especially Hallmark ornaments. She and my grandmother taught me everything I know about cooking, baking, living, and surviving the insensitivities of the real world. Both would have supported my pride affiliation. If you asked me my favorite meal, it would have to be savory Safeway fried chicken and mashed potatoes, accompanied by a Coca-Cola served in a frosted Coke glass from the freezer. If you knew me well, you knew that I had uncanny affinity for recalling precise dates, numbers, events, and people. Some found that annoying, others were in awe. It was both a blessing and a curse to me as I found my mind constantly obsessing over details. I was consumed with writing things down. I could easily have wallpapered my entire home with bits of paper covered by my endless penned notes. If you took the time to engage in a conversation with me, I hope it was meaningful, even if I was accusatory, obtrusive, short-sighted, or abrupt. If you eventually found my obsessive, repetitive ramblings or paranoia annoying, I now understand your hesitancy and frustration about maintaining a friendship or taking my phone call. If you were still patient with me over and over and were persistent regarding my well-being, I can only thank you for not giving up on me. If you caught me on a good day, I hope I was able to be the best version of me. If you could write my life story, it would not be complete without mentioning my unwavering love affair with older cars, especially my Monte Carlos, dispersing those cars in 2023 and selling my mom's home with 60 years of my memories was the second hardest time in my life. If you made it possible for me to have dreams of a new home and a new life, thank you for the gift of hope. Although my mind worked overtime, my failing heart could not keep up with the rigors of making that final move. If you responded to the 911 call and found me deceased, I thank you for treating the situation with dignity and respect. Butte Silverbow has an amazing, very impressive group of young adults on staff who took exceptional care of the scene at the scene and above all calmed my frightened dog. If we shared a love of animals and you supported a no-kill policy at the animal shelter, then you will be happy to know that my beloved puppy, my faithful friend and constant companion, has already been adopted by a nice family. If you have been misunderstood and mistreated by others for your uniqueness, I hope you will find a support system in your future. Stay strong. Life is not kind to the tender-hearted, the soft-spoken, and those who struggle with their differences. If you can choose to be anything in the world, be kind and live by the golden rule. Lastly, if you find someone to grow old with you and share in your journey through life, treasure and nurture that relationship by staying healthy both physically and mentally so you can care for those you love. No services are scheduled at this time. So I can't see people's faces, so I just want to make sure that that's not too much. I felt like that was, I mean, obviously so impactful and poetic, and he was able to own his story in a way that most people don't get to. Most of the time, our stories are defined for us quickly and under pressure by the people who are left, if an obituary gets written at all. And so, in a couple generations, no one's going to remember any of us, which is the truth that I don't actually find to be that sad. So I love when someone just goes all out and tells the whole story with all the nuance. I believe it's cathartic, and for those who are writing it, and for, like I said before, for those who are left behind. So that's James. The notes that I keep for my obituary will not be like that. Like that, first of all, I don't know that I could write anything that sort of rhythmic and poetic, but my stuff is she loves crossword puzzles, she was punctual to a fault, she, those kinds of very little details, more along the lines of Trish's if it was self-written. That's kind of where my heart is. But I mean, when I read obituaries like James's on social media, it gets a lot of feedback. And I do sometimes read ones for people who are going through addiction or did go through addiction or died by suicide. And The community that has built up around Tips from Dead People, I do not have to deal with online trolls. I don't know, honestly, I don't exactly know why I have escaped that, but the community that comments on my videos is kind and supportive, like 99%. Someone once told me that I looked like Nicolas Cage in his bad years. So, I mean, they get that kind of random comment, but for the most part, it's a very, very nice community.
I just want to say that when I watched you read that obituary for the first time, it choked me up, and it choked me up again when you read it just now. That person obviously had a hard time fitting into society, and I was impressed that they were able to share that much in their obituary because that felt a little vulnerable to me. To be that open in your obituary. And I like the fact that he mentioned that him and his mom sold Avon together. That is just too cute. You know, it's sweet.
Legendary,
It's
a
very
boy and his mom
sweet.
just selling Avon.
It's a very sweet obituary.
This is Pam, and I do have a question. You said you do this on Twitter, and what else?
Not Twitter. TikTok is the main one, but like I said, not everybody's comfortable being on TikTok. And I think after this fall or maybe next March, it may not exist. So I started Instagram. I think there's around 22,000 or so followers on Instagram. So I don't think that one's going to go away. And so I don't think my account will ever go away. And I think this year I will probably kind of reluctantly, but in some ways, okay, add Facebook.
With being blind, we have to use these screen reading programs, and I cannot use Instagram. It doesn't, I fight with it constantly.
What about YouTube? Because I was thinking about adding that one too.
Now YouTube is, yeah, YouTube or Facebook both work really well.
Oh, they do.
I just wanted to throw that out there to you because I'm sure you did it. I had no idea.
Oh, I know, no idea, and I'm grateful for that information. That actually makes me feel better and is a great reason to hop on Facebook. Meta pushes Instagram content to Facebook and vice versa, so it was probably going to happen anyway, but I want to make a concerted effort, I think, to grow a Facebook community. I have heard from other social media people that I've met at different meetings that Facebook is a little dicier when it comes to that online community and like the free for all of comments, but I think it's worth doing. So yeah, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. I do have a YouTube account, and I also have a Substack page. Back in January, when TikTok was going to get banned for the first time, I quickly set up the Instagram account and Substack. And although I'm not a writer per se, I have found it kind of interesting and fun. That's a good challenge for me to try to write a few things on Substack. I mean, I'm not reinventing the wheel or anything. It's just some of my random thoughts, but that's another way to
What
get in touch
is
with me. But actually, this might be a good time to talk about, in terms of obituaries, the business of obituaries. You have a choice. Obviously, when you're writing one for someone else or for yourself, you can pay to put it in a newspaper, or there are some community newspapers that still do it as a public service for free. Smaller towns usually. The newspaper in Berkeley, California, made a commitment, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, to make all obituaries free. And no surprise, they're awesome. Like, because it's free and sort of you can tell an unlimited story, people do. And they, of course, Berkeley has an amazing cast of characters, but and the editors of that newspaper report that their subscriptions went up, which to me, that's just a no-brainer. If you make obituaries a loss leader and get people to your site through that storytelling, you remain the kind of the history, the heart of the community. But that's not, newspapers can't give up on a profit center. And just like the way Craigslist took away their classified ads, I have a feeling that in a generation, people won't be paying for the newspapers to do this. So then the next opportunity for you to post an obituary would be with the funeral home or cremation provider. There's nothing aesthetically pleasing about any of those sites, but the advantage is that you can tell a long story and you can add pictures and there's comments and so forth. A lot of those funeral homes and newspapers have a financial relationship with a company called legacy.com, which you probably have seen. And they act as the back-end obituary archive for probably 80% of American newspapers and for increasingly a lot of those funeral homes too. So if you post what you think is on like the newspaper or the funeral home site, and a week later it ends up on Legacy. That's why. I don't love Legacy, but I actually use them a lot to share obituaries simply because it's free to go there. And then the last category of place that you can post an obituary are there's free startups. There's a bunch of obituary startups around the country that you could use as well. So it's kind of an interesting ecosystem. I really choose not to focus too much about that in my videos because I just, for me, the artistic value and the psychological value of this whole project that I'm doing is about
Oh,
life advice and
and I
just
think it's a
making you
lovely
feel
thing.
better and seen, making you feel in telling your story that you are enough and that it's better to tell a broken, honest story than airbrush something. I've shared a couple obituaries recently. I don't know if you saw these, Jamie, but what I would call scorched earth. Basically, the world was a better place. The world will be a better place w because this person is gone. They were a terrible parent, da, 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 da. And I, you know, it's like the etiquette part of me, the polite part of me is kind of like, would I do that? I don't think I would do that. And I get nervous when I post those because I think, okay, now the trolls are going to come out because this is too
No.
brutal, and the dead person didn't get a chance to defend
To
themselves.
say their set
Yes.
their story.
However, if I do a video like that and it gets, I don't know, 30,000 views and there's 400 comments, for example, 395 of those comments will be, I support the person for telling their story. If they wanted something nice written about them, they should have been nice. They should have healed those relationships while they were alive. The obituary is for the people left behind, and this is their story. They shouldn't have to paint over it and pretend like it didn't happen. So it's like, I don't know, I've probably done 15 of those over the course of this couple year project, and that's the pattern every single time. I'm always a little bit surprised by it because I'm just more of a polite person, but I actually agree with them. And I agree that let's have more sunlight in these stories. But I do love more evocative, more truthful obituaries when they are occurring. And I don't know if my sample size is just skewed, but I feel like it's happening more and more, and I'm for it.
Well, at least there is a historical record, and we're going to have fewer and fewer of these with the death of the newspapers, and because it's too easy to lose online archives.
Yep, I do agree. And I mean, there's places like Find a Grave, but that's a whole other topic. And there's all kinds of unethical actors in the business of death space. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the next generation brings. Okay, so I have a short, funny one that I thought might be good. And then if you want, I can end with another self-written one.
One thing I wanted to bring up was somebody I know talked about like how they put on your gravestone your birth date and your death date, and then there's the dash, and they say the dash is the story. So if you are thinking about writing your own obituary, you should think about your dash. Like who really cares what day you were born? We want the meat of the story. We want the dash. We want to know all your life things. And
1000% agree with that.
you always say in your videos that the little things are the big things. And that stuck in my head. And as I go through my life, I try to remember that the little things are really the big things because the world seems to be on fire right now. And that kind of gives me a little bit of self-preservation.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's definitely that angle that finding joy in the little things, that's absolutely an act of self-preservation. And the other thing is, I think, like Walt had mentioned, the New York Times obituaries. Sometimes I read those because they're well written and I like to read them. I don't sh really share them online because they're usually of like famous people or semi-famous people. But there is sometimes a negative effect where you're reading this long thing of a very like wealthy, accomplished person, and it leaves you feeling like I have felt so many times, kind of like, okay, well, what if I do want to just talk about something not as great? So I think the little things, elevating the little things, has many, many good effects, and those being just a couple of them. Okay, so this is Marie, and I think this is directly related. All right. Marie Ann McNally passed away March 1st, 2020. Not your ordinary obituary, not your ordinary mother. My mother loved her scratch-offs. I have many memories of me driving her so she could scratch her way around town. We would spend hours doing this, regardless of time constraints or social obligations. She once told me of an instance where she stopped on her way to work and got a winner, so she went to the next store and got another winner, and so on and so on. She never made it to work that day. She just spent the day scratching her tickets. That was my mom, the ticket lady. She did things on her terms. My little mama fended off a would-be mugger one day when a man reaching through her driver's side window while she was scratching a ticket and tried to grab her purse. She grabbed him by the arm and punched him in the face, probably while using her very colorful vocabulary to assault him with. You didn't dare cross her because she would go from zero to MMA fighter in 2.2 seconds. She was only 5 feet tall. But you were certain to face imminent death if she got her hands on you. She's been known to roll down her windows as we drive by the Scientology headquarters and spit out profanities at the top of her lungs. She loved a good joke, the dirtier the better. She would tell jokes that would make you blush. She had a very eclectic sense of style. She's been trying to push off an embroidered leather poncho onto me for years. She loved animals, hated spiders, and she cared immensely for those who were lucky enough to know her. She loved Usher, hated Kanye, and thought Clint Eastwood was a quote sexy son of a bitch. She loved to love you from afar. Surely, if you were around her too much, you would get on her nerves. She loved cars, old and new, and she loved White Castle burgers. She is being sent off in eternity with some of her favorite things. She certainly would bust out laughing if she knew what was going with her. May you finally rest in peace, Mama, and go high up in the clouds where you belong. That is an example of the little things are the big things. Her job wasn't even mentioned once. Like oftentimes I'll say, like, please don't let your obituary be something that could be posted on LinkedIn, because ugh. And hers is a great example of that. 75% of her obituary is about scratch off tickets. And you can tell her daughter wrote this, and they are just, it's just like she's talking, almost like doing a voice memo into the phone or talking to a friend. Nobody edited this. This isn't like done in the AP style. It's just her. And I love that so much. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that in this big kind of crazy, big, punishing, insensitive world, this is the kind of thing that makes me feel better. And I love it a lot. So, okay, I have one more, which is another self-written one, and maybe this has given me inspiration in the years since I first found it or was sent to me, and in terms of writing something about myself, and because I just feel like it speaks for a lot of us. Okay, this is Liz. As a girl growing up in Goderich, this is in Canada, life could be fun. My pack of girlfriends had handstand competitions in the rolling waves of Lake Huron, wiener roasts under the old Saltford Bridge, and bike hikes where we would eat our sandwiches and practice smoking cigarettes to enhance our charm and allure. Life in Goderich could also be exciting, like the day in March when I rescued my friend after she fell through the ice on the raging river. The two of us had long ago shed blood to make ourselves blood sisters, but that rescue made her my sister by choice, my choice, maybe not hers. Goderich life could also get tedious just driving around the square the way we did again and again. But things weren't always fun for me. So when I felt sad or afraid, I'd pray, please change something in my bedroom so I'll know things will be okay. It didn't have to be something big, but secretly I was hoping for something quite spectacular, like changing my little brown bed to solid gold. My second sister by choice was a woman I met in Waterloo when we started our teaching careers at the same school in the early 1970s. We not only shared an apartment and became classmates where we earned our psychology degrees, We also tented our way across Canada to Victoria, BC, and back in a very cramped car. I gave her the title Sister by Choice because she's the least judgmental person I've ever met. And that was good because we spent a lot of time together and I have a few flaws. I found another Sister by Choice in an adult swim class at the Waterloo Y. We earned our Star Six badges and went on to get our bronze medallion, thinking we'd like to advance to our bronze cross. We showed up for the first class, hearing the laundry list of clothing we were to bring the next week, layers of bulky stuff and shoes for swimming lengths. She and I shared a look, walked off the pool deck, and went for a beer. I left Waterloo teaching and moved to Toronto at about the same time my swim class sister moved west. I took up a new career in advertising and was at my desk when my BC friend called. She'd given my number to Steve, her husband's boss. That blind date turned into a lifelong love affair. Marrying Steve is the best thing I've ever done. I've never felt so loved. His embrace is my fortress and the source of my ecstasy. Best of all, we were blessed with two wonderful sons. They are the source of my delight. We moved a lot, to Australia for over a year, then back for another stay in Waterloo, where we met lifelong friends. We got a goofy dog, then we got a goofy horse, my dream come true. We moved again to the shore of Georgian Bay, where last of all, we got another goofy dog. Wherever we went, we were a happy family. In retirement, Steve and I have settled in Sarnia, a small, friendly city on the shore of beautiful Lake Huron. Back in 1995, when the kids were 7 and 4, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Treatments, surgery, and a solid, compassionate medical team got me this far, but cancer has returned. Still, I have blessings to count. I'm not alone on this path. I have an enduring romance with a steadfast partner. I have devoted sons whose love for me is pure. I am Canadian. I voted. I have a free library card. Hey! I'm a member of the UCC of Canada. Like me, imperfect but trying. I had enough years to forge a loving relationship with my mom. Interesting. I've lived a small but important life. I broke the chain of domestic violence I grew up with. As a girl, I had asked God to change something in my bedroom as a sign that everything would be okay. Now, when I wake up and look around, I see that everything has changed and I have lived happily ever after. So when I'm gone, whenever you see a little blue butterfly or a blazing sunset, whatever brings you joy or gives you cause to wonder, pause, smile, and say, "There goes Liz." It feels
That's a
like a
good
nice
one.
one to end on, doesn't it?
That's a good
Yeah.
one. Yeah.
That was a good one.
Well, thank you, Mary. This has been wonderful. And I'm going to go home and get me a little notebook and start thinking of what I want to put in my obituary.
Jot down things for your own obituary. That's,
Yeah.
I love it. Please contact me, anyone, if you have any questions. My email is tipsfromdeadpeople@gmail.com. Yeah, this was a pleasure.